Hello and welcome to Backmarker Podcast. This is episode number 78. My name is Braden.
My name is Raj.
How you doing, Raj?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm just getting my headphones. There we go.
Alrighty. Yeah.
All right, we're ready to podcast.
Cool.
First things first, what did you think of the race?
It was shit.
Okay. Well, that was fun. We've been Backmarker Podcast, Facebook, but what? No. We have to talk about it. We have to talk about it properly.
All right. That was the short one word review of China.
I think there's things to talk about.
There's definitely things to talk about. It wasn't the greatest race in terms of anything.
Yeah. I mean, the thousandth race, there's certainly better ones. There's been 1,000 now. We can say it's in the top 1,000.
Yeah.
Maybe not even in the top 500 of all time.
I mean, look, really did.
There's been a lot.
Wow, it's 1,000th race. It really does feel like it's dragging out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In that sense, it was the perfect race.
as a metaphor for how long we've been going.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Fuck, this Formula One race has been going a long time. I feel like I could have watched 1,000 races by now. It wasn't that. It wasn't that bad. Okay, look, let's just do it. Let's go straight into our race review of the Shanghai Chinese Grand Prix.
Sure.
Lots of things to take away. I'm just pulling up the full results list of the Chinese Grand Prix. But first of all, did you catch any practice or qualifying? Anything stand out to you on the Friday or Saturday?
Albon in qualifying. But besides that, probably not
or
much.
Or not in qualifying, as it were.
He destroyed that car.
Yeah, that was at the end of free practice 3. So no qualifying.
Oh, yes. Sorry, yes.
His car was no longer a car. It was just a collection of debris.
It was a carcass.
Ah, very clever.
Hey.
Yes, that is probably the most notable thing in practice. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, Ferrari looked okay, but Mercedes were coming out swinging, and it all came down to qualifying.
Ferrari looked okay, but Mercedes
they didn't look as strong
looked
as I thought they would.
No.
I thought they were going to be really strong.
No, and Mercedes looked almost dominant in the way that Mercedes does. They never pull out all their stops in practice, and it showed. Mm. Ferrari's faults really, shone this race. But we'll get into that. But Mercedes is looking extremely strong.
They've done a 1 and 2 on the trot,
three
in a row
races,
which hasn't happened since Williams in the '80s for first three races of a season.
Yeah.
So one of the strongest starts of a season we've seen from anyone.
Can we change our predictions?
Yeah, what did we do? I'm pretty sure we were both kind of
both said Ferrari, I think, to win the Constructors.
It's not looking too solid for that prediction. But
sure.
Let's get into the race. We'll do team by team, and we, as we have been doing lately, go from the DNFs upwards.
Sure.
First of all, Nico Hülkenberg retired after, let me see, 40 laps. That can't be right. 16 laps, unfortunately, was his retirement. Not another good race for Renault.
Look, on in terms of Hülkenberg, yeah, it really wasn't. It was an MGUK issue, as far as I remember. I've got a story here actually about it. We might as well get into that right now. So Hülkenberg's Chinese GP retirement related to the Renault MGUK change. So basically, Renault was forced to produce a new spec MGUK after McLaren's Carlos Sainz Jr. suffered a failure in the Australian Grand Prix, right? So this is weird, but think back to that. The Spaniard had the new unit for Bahrain, but the works team stuck with the original version, only to suffer a costly double retirement when both Hülkenberg and Ricciardo both stopped in the closing stages of the race. So anyway, both works drivers and McLaren's Lando Norris took revised units for China, and Renault believes the change triggered a software problem that forced Hülkenberg out of the race. So, yeah, I know, right? Obitable came out and said, we had to push massively on production in order to get more parts, which meant that we had to fast-track some of the process and some of the sign-off that we do. And basically something was triggered that we had not, what does this say in English? That we basically couldn't sign off. We didn't have the time to properly sign off on it.
So we,
in other words,
it
slipped through and yeah, it was our fault basically. And he says, we've covered 5,000 kilometers on the dyno with that part. It's just for one particular reason. We went into a mode which triggered something in the software. Abitable said the glitch can be resolved without the need to rush through a third specification of MGUK hardware before the next race in Baku.
Yeah, Renault, they do have 2 weeks, luckily. That's amateur shit. I mean, that's right up there with, there's too many bits on this car.
Yeah, seriously, it is. Williams is looking for a team boss. Cyril?
Yeah, you jump on board and just go, fuck, there's so many bits on this car.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to another sad story of DNFing. Daniel Kvyat, he managed 41 laps before disappearing from the race. One thing we should say, his opening lap was eventful.
It was.
That was a crazy one. I messaged you at the time, or in our group chat. I said, first of all, Lando Norris is not getting out of that. Like, he looked the most in trouble.
Yeah.
But apparently the incident was Daniel Kvyat was the one that most damaged because he was the next to retire out of that McLaren sandwich.
Yep.
He basically, I don't think he was really doing anything wrong. I honestly think the punishment he got, which was a stop-and-go penalty, a drive-through penalty, really, really harsh for just being in the wrong place at the wrong time on opening lap. I don't think it was a very deserved penalty.
I don't think anyone does. Most commentators have commentated on the fact that his penalty was completely blown out of proportion.
Apparently, according to Kvyat, the stewards even said, we think that was a bit harsh, and they made the decision. You know, allegedly, according to Kvyat, he was told that, but it seems unreasonable.
It does. It seems ridiculous, and I don't know if the stewards can apologize. I don't know if it'll make it any better. But maybe they can rub Kvyat's belly or something in the next race.
He was having a bad race, and then, you know, there was a bit of damage, so eventually that was retired. He might have been able to finish if he was in a better position, but they realized it wasn't worth it. So out of the race he went, and then shortly afterwards on that 50, Lando Norris followed. So I was correct that he wasn't going to finish the race in that car.
Yeah.
I was just surprised how long he ended up managing to get through it.
Yeah, yeah.
He went flying up in the air, slammed back down. I was
Lando
very surprised.
Lando had a bad weekend. In general, he was really due for one. He was due for one,
like,
exactly.
The start of the career, he's come out of the gates. out of their gates, you know, really, really strong in the first two races, and it's all kind of come back to reality a little bit.
Yeah, it really, really has.
That's for McLaren in general, but yeah, especially for Lando. So anyway, those are the DNFs covered.
Yeah, something Star Wars joke.
Why?
Because of Lando.
Like Lando Calrissian?
Yeah, that was...
I'm not so sure about that one.
All right. Well, I literally just said something Star Wars joke. I made negative effort on that.
Well, one thing you did do right is you predicted the amount of DNFs. You said 3, and there was 3. I said 2. After the formation lap, and I saw 2 cars spinning, I was like, fuck, I'm changing my prediction. I think there'll be 5. but no, it was only 3.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly enough, somehow Lando, I thought, would make it to the end at one point. I'm like, holy crap. Like, how is that car still moving?
Yeah,
you know, exactly.
Exactly
right. And then eventually it was like...
Anyway, yeah. Moving on. Williams, 16th and 17th, the last of the finishes. One thing you can say is at least they're not DNFing. They're just 2 laps down each. That's all we can say. Fuck, it's a sad state of affairs.
I don't even, yeah.
Moving on, Antonio Giovinazzi, also not a positive thing to say. He had a similar issue to Leclerc, apparently.
Yeah, no, Antonio, it was not his fault. I think this entire weekend, all of the issues that he had, none of it was his fault. So I don't believe that Raikkonen looking like he's just blowing...
Raikkonen is outdriving the crap out of that car, and Antonio Giovinazzi is having the worst luck trying to keep up. Like, he's always going to struggle, and then add on a bunch of bad luck. It's a really bad combination.
But seriously, his luck is genuinely awful. So we'll see.
Better than last year in China. Last year in China, all he managed to do was slam the car into the wall twice.
Yeah.
So, improvements.
Okay, taking your bets. Now, who's going to get it together first? Gasly.
Okay. What is his bookie character you've developed?
No!
Okay, Gasly or Antonio Giovinazzi?
Yes, correct.
I think Gasly will because he's got more to gain and, okay. more, and more to lose.
Yeah.
Antonio Giovinazzi, I think, is almost just lucky to be there. At a certain point, you can't be that unlucky for this long and stay in Formula One.
Fair enough. Fair
Whether
enough.
Or not that's a justified opinion, I think that is a fact. You cannot be that unlucky for that long.
It's true. No one can be. You would think, but people in Formula One seem to hold the worst luck for the longest time.
Fair call. We'll get to Grosjean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get to Grosjean. Oh, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, sorry. You were saying something about Antonio Giovinazzi.
Antonio. But yes, I believe Antonio will eventually come good. I think that it'll...
You've been a big fan of his, though. You're a fan of his. I remember we saw his debut in Formula One at Albert Park a few years ago.
Yeah, no.
And you were really cheering him on. So I think you've got, some
horse in that
fight.
I do have a soft spot for him.
Yeah.
But I believe that he can and will get it together. Mm-hmm. Pierre Gasly, on the other hand, is going up against Max Verstappen, who I believe to be a better driver than Raikkonen. And I think that he has a better chance of actually getting it together with that car. Gasly, on the other hand, he has so much more to lose. 100%. And eventually, Helmut's sword might come down on his head before he has the chance to prove anything.
Maybe. We will get to Gasly soon. But first, we have... who is this? Carlos Sainz Jr. In 14th. Kind of the only saving grace for McLaren that they at least got one car to the end. But,
yeah.
I mean, they had a really positive sort of start to this season. And this race was not there for them. You know, Carlos Sainz has come out and said, this has kind of put us back, firmly on the ground in reality. This race weekend was a slap to the face, but also kind of back to where we thought we would be.
Yeah.
Back to reality. I think McLaren are going to have a little bit of a hard time regaining their early season form. But I don't think this is super representative. You know, I think 14th and DNF is not where they're quite at. I think they're better than that, at least.
I don't think it's like last year, for example, when their season started off really strongly. And then developmentally, they kind of just fell apart. I really don't believe that's going to happen to McLaren this year.
Sure.
And I think they have a much better chance at pushing through, especially with guys like Lando and Carlos, at the wheel.
Sure.
They're not slow drivers by any means. So. Yeah.
No, that's fair enough.
Hopefully their wheeling can make the change.
Yes, and moving on to the Haas guys, I thought they were going to have a decent weekend this time.
Yeah.
We're in that group chat. Someone says, maybe a miracle Renault comeback, decent finish Renault. I said, in all honesty, I think Haas have a better chance this weekend than Renault of getting shit together. They didn't quite live up to that expectation. Magnussen finishing in 13th and Romain Grosjean finishing just outside the points in 11th. I'm looking up above them. I mean, the only person I could really think that they could be fighting for those points are, the Sergio Perez, Kimi Raikkonen, and Alex Albon at the end of that. You know, they should be a little higher. I think Haas have a lot to gain in terms of ground, but I don't know. They just don't, I don't see like what it is that's holding them back to where they are right now. Normally the beginning of the season has been good for them, and so far it's been a little, disappointing.
That's fine. I think this year, honestly, the midfield is even closer than it was last year.
Yeah, true.
And I think it punishes, when you're having a bad weekend, when a certain track doesn't love your car.
Yeah, and then you get a bit of bad luck. It's just like compounded issues.
Everything
yeah.
compounds, and it's a car that can be firmly and doubled in the points one week, can be freaking dead last the next week. I mean, obviously, in front of Williams.
Yeah. Not dead last, but I know what you mean. Because that midfield gap is so much slimmer.
It's so much slimmer, really.
Speaking of the midfield, we have Lance Stroll sitting right between those two Haases in 12th. I did hear one bit of very, very funny team radio with Lance Stroll. Force India guys came over the radio and said, hey, Lance, every time you think you're pressing energy, you're pressing radio.
I did see that.
So obviously he's sitting there, and they're hearing, whee! Down the straights, and they go, he thinks he's pressing energy, but we are just hearing him on the radio every time. So a bit of a fuck up there.
Oh, Lord.
But, I mean, he's still getting used to the seat, a couple of steering wheel changes compared to Williams. But, I don't know. He is holding his own. Perez definitely outperformed him this weekend, but I think he's still holding his own.
It, Yeah, we'll see. Give him until the end of the year.
Yes.
I know that he's going to have that seat until the end of the year, unlike a lot of people.
Yes, he's like one of the few that like there is no risk. He can do the worst, he can have the worst weekends week in, week out. There's very little chance anything's happening there.
Like in Gran Turismo, when you start going the wrong way around a track, right? And the warnings are flashing up on the screen. He could do that.
Yeah. And eventually, as the game would do, eventually it just sort of like spawns you back into place.
Yeah.
That's what his daddy will do. Like, it's all right, you're fine. Push you go. Off you go. You're fine. moving on. Now we're in the points. Alexander Albon, the nominated driver of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really cool to see someone down in 10th get the driver of the day. It's very rare that we see a non-Verstappen or Hamilton or, you know, Raikkonen.
It is, but I mean, considering his accident, we all saw what was left of that
car. Started from the
car.
Pits. Started from swinging. Pit lane. It's amazing story from him. Now we can talk about the Gasly thing a little bit because for the first time, I've seen this article now pop up. Gasly to lose his seat to Albon?
Yeah, hey. Weird that I said that at the start of the year.
Well, I was at the first two races thinking, well, maybe Kvyat's going to make that run.
Yeah, no. And I was like, no.
And Albon. You said Albon. I'm like, yeah, okay, baby. This week looked very good for him. I mean, look, Gasly didn't do too badly. He came sixth. He's, you know, that's not too far off where Red Bull should be.
No.
Really, it's not that bad.
Position-wise, it isn't.
But I mean, look, it's three races in. I don't like having this conversation about Gasly so early, but I mean, Albon is a good race. It was a good race. It is not consistent enough for me to say anything more than he had a very good race this weekend.
Yeah.
Let's see if he can continue.
Let's see if he can continue. And Gasly needs to start improving in reference to his only other benchmark, Max Verstappen. Yes.
I'm still going to stop you from talking about it because we're going to get there.
Okay.
Just in context of Albon. He needs to also worry about that too.
Oh, he does.
Now we can talk about Kimi Raikkonen and Sergio Perez. They were both in 9th and 8th. We've
Kimi Raikkonen and Sergio Perez
in 9th and 8th, respectively.
Yeah, you're right.
Kimi Raikkonen, again, just... I think we're going to see Kimi Raikkonen between 9th and 7th in every race this year at this rate.
I think we're going to see Kimi Raikkonen on the grid for the next 25 years.
Okay, good prediction. I like it. I like it, you know, wheeled onto the track in his wheelchair.
After all, did you see his thing? He's doing F1 now because it's really fun and it's a hobby to him now.
Yeah, I saw. Actually, we're just going to get through all our news doing this.
Yeah, I know.
I have a story about Kimi Raikkonen. He apparently sketched his own brake pedal changes.
Sorry?
So Alfa Romeo team boss Frederick Vasser confirmed that Kimi Raikkonen gets so much more joy and motivation from Formula One as a hobby rather than a job, citing the driver has recently been sketching out his own brake pedal changes.
Sketching out like for an artistic thing?
No. He's not like putting fucking pictures on the fridge at the Sauber factory. Essentially, the brake pedal down there where you put your foot that brakes the car. You're familiar with the brake pedal?
Yes.
He's been designing shape changes to it that he thinks will better suit him and his driving style. So he's actually gone from like, I've drawn this up, given it to his engineers and says, work on something
brake
like this.
Brake pedal? I thought you were talking about brake pads.
Sorry, I said brake pad pedal at the beginning, which isn't a thing. I meant brake pedal.
Okay, right.
He was in the office all of last week. He made some drawings of the brake pedals because he wants to make some changes and he makes them on drawing paper. Honestly, I really like his level of commitment. It's very impressive, and he's obviously taking a lot of joy as a hobby in this sport.
Mm.
I think you're right. I think he just likes, you know, coming to a race, driving the car, going home, not talking to the media very much, drawing pretty pictures.
That's pretty much
hanging out with his family. Like, he's loving it.
There's so much more kind of scrutiny on you when you're a Ferrari driver.
Yeah, he must love that. I mean, I was listening to an interview from here with him, the Behind the Grid podcast, and he is just like, I mean, he's still a very hard to talk to person, but he is so relaxed.
Mm.
You know, since leaving Ferrari, he seems just, you know, a little more lighthearted, even though you don't get much out of him. It just, what you do is so relaxed. It's great to see.
Yeah.
I think you're right. He's on a 2-year contract. I wouldn't be totally surprised if that goes an extra year or so.
Yeah.
It's insane, but it wouldn't surprise. I think we see him till 2021.
Shit, if he's still having fun and if he's still performing.
Mm.
Because this year, I mean, he's kicking the crap out of Antonio Giovinazzi right now. If that continues for the rest of the year, he'll keep his seat. He'll keep it for as long as he can keep doing that.
Yeah, exactly. They'd have no reason to change him. He's a great person to have in your team.
Yep.
Sergio Perez, on the other hand, in comparison, he's still a great person to have in your team. Sergio Perez coming in eighth, scoring points for, not Force India, Racing Point, Sport Pesa, whatever the pink cars are called now.
Something, Force India Racing, whatever they're called.
Exactly. I don't know, a bit disappointing. I didn't see too much of his race because he didn't exactly have to do too much to get there, would you say? I don't know.
He had a very, kind of lonely race.
A little bit, yeah. Not so much compared to Daniel Ricciardo, who seemed to have had the loneliest race of his career.
Yeah.
I think I saw him at the start, and that was it. I didn't see him a single other time.
Yep.
That was it.
And actually, I've got a story about Daniel Ricciardo.
Correct. But a good race from him, mind you, though.
A good
turnaround for him, coming in seventh. Like,
of course, yeah, a points finish.
Really glad to see him kind of a little more comfortable in that car, it seems.
Yeah, a little more comfortable, yeah. Although that car really isn't more comfortable with anything. At least he's more comfortable with it.
Okay.
But anyhow, a bold one-stop Ricciardo strategy made Renault pace look miserable. Quote, miserable, according to Cyril Abitbol. Ricciardo was one of five drivers that qualified in the top 10, obliged to start on the soft tyre after using it in Q2, along with Pierre Gasly, Nico Hülkenberg, Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen.
Mm.
But anyhow, it meant an 18-lap opening stint on his used soft tyres, followed by a 38-lap run to the finish on a hard tyre. Ricciardo ended up a lap down, but the strategy paid off as he finished 7th, 1.9 seconds clear of Sergio Perez and best of the rest. And so, yeah, his fastest lap was only 16th fastest in the entire field. And so it really was just this turtle kind of race.
Yeah.
And it paid off, but it was the slowest race in the world.
Yeah, that's why we never saw him on TV, because he was literally just doing nothing but nurse that car around the track.
Pretty much. And he said, he said this, it was extremely challenging to make the one-stop work, and it was frustrating not seeing the car's potential, because obviously you couldn't show any pace. You had to not show pace in order to make the damn strategy work. So Cyril would have much rather had a two-stop, but he was forced into a one-stop by his strategy team, and yeah, it paid off. So a good day for Renault, as much as it was a slow, crawly kind of day for Renault. And yeah, let's just ignore Hülkenberg, because I reckon that's going to be, for the entire season, it's going to be like one Renault car will do really well.
They'll make you
happy, and the other one will just fucking blow up.
Yeah, that's why I still support Daniel Ricciardo, but I am not getting my hopes up on ever supporting Renault as my team.
Yeah.
Because I just don't want that disappointment constantly.
Yeah.
Especially at the moment.
What t-shirt am I wearing right now?
Yeah, Raj, I noticed you are wearing a Renault shirt.
A Works Renault 2019 freaking, yeah, shirt.
Traitor. Wait, why am I giving the news noise? We haven't done the thing. Okay, moving on. Pierre Gasly. he is the next finisher. Now we can talk about how he sucks. No, I'm kidding. Now we can talk about how he's at risk of sucking. How do you put this, Raj?
That he sucks?
That's rough. I don't know, man. You loved him last year, man.
I still think he will improve, and really he just needs to get his shit together. But fact of the matter is he's not performing. Even moving from the first race to second race to the third race, he doesn't seem to be improving in reference to Max Verstappen. That's not good enough.
He did get fastest lap.
Well, yeah, because they stopped him put him on fresh tyres.
Yeah, he got fastest lap, though.
By the way, is what Ferrari should have done to Charles Leclerc, but they didn't.
They might not have been able to retain. Oh, they probably could have.
No, they could have with room to spare.
Yeah, they could have.
No, they should have done it without a doubt in my mind.
Man, we're going to get to Ferrari, don't worry. But yeah, Gasly got fastest lap at least. There's something.
Yeah, I mean, look,
I'm finding positives where there are some, Raj.
Sure. Fine. I'm just saying from Ferrari's point of view, it was dumb.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about Ferrari then.
Okay.
Charles Leclerc, he came fifth. Should have came second, third, somewhere on the podium. Like, that's probably undeniable. Race orders were given.
Yes.
Team orders were given.
Ten laps in.
Yeah, it was basically Leclerc, you need to speed it up or we're going to get Vettel to pass you. And he goes, all right, give me 2 laps. And then like 2 seconds later, all right, Leclerc, you got to let him pass. That was it. That was done and dusted. He let him pass. Vettel did not go like immediately, you know, miles ahead of him. He held on Leclerc to kind of prove that he wasn't that much slower, but eventually had to give that one up. And he was thrown to the wolves, essentially. He ended up in fifth behind Max Verstappen because of that decision.
Yes.
I think what would have happened otherwise was maybe a third and fourth for Ferrari. I don't think it mattered to the end result of the 1-2 for Mercedes, but I think it definitely cost Leclerc a position. It cost Ferrari a position, because I think the end order would have been Leclerc, Vettel, then Verstappen, in my opinion. Without knowing definitively, I think that's what would have ended up.
Maybe, Mr. Oracle. But
that's what I think.
Hey, I've got a really long story about this.
All right, exactly. Give us the summary, and then we'll be able to speculate on top.
All right, I'll give you the summary / the really drawn-out version.
Oh, God.
So
wake me up when you're done.
All right, so don't snore this time. But inevitably, Ferrari's decision to order Leclerc to hand third position over to Sebastian Vettel after just 10 laps in Shanghai kind of overshadowed Lewis Hamilton's dominant victory, which sealed 3 1-2s on the trot for Mercedes. But anyway, Leclerc was struggling to hold on to Bottas, but he was still just 2.8 seconds behind at the end of lap 8. About the time Ferrari team radio was broadcast asking Vettel how much faster he could go, Vettel, it transpires, had been on the team saying he felt he could go a lot faster. Leclerc was asked to speed up, but the gap to Bottas started growing. Not because Leclerc was going any slower, but because Bottas was going faster. Very shortly afterwards, the team orders were given, so he complied. But Vettel now had the gap to Bottas grow out to 3.7 seconds. Now, the gap to Bottas kept on growing, not because Bottas was getting any faster, but because Vettel was actually going slower, if you look at the data. So in front of Leclerc, Vettel could not keep up the pace with his teammate. Sorry, could not keep up with the pace his teammate had kind of been showing when he was in front. He was lapping in the mid 1 minute 39s while Leclerc had generally been in the high 38s. So Leclerc sat behind just a little bit further back than Vettel had been behind him. Vettel was pushing, and at times it looked like he might be stretching the gap, but other times he was making mistakes, locking brakes, and at any ground, any time it looked like he might throw the damn thing into the wall. So Vettel was not showing that he was a four-time world champion, put it that way. So at this point, meanwhile, Max Verstappen's Red Bull was tracking the Ferraris just 2 seconds behind, and on lap 17, the team pounced. He pitted for fresh tyres, going for the undercut, where the faster lap kind of jumps the driver ahead. Leclerc's fourth place was gone, and Vettel nearly lost third despite stopping on the next lap. So for the rest of the race, Ferrari were on the back foot against Verstappen, acting reactively rather than proactively.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point I think we need to make. The reactive versus proactive approach that Ferrari seem to constantly make.
Constantly.
Wow. Like, I cannot believe how many times we see this happen from Ferrari. They go, Vettel, go! And then they just kind of, like, get themselves in this terrible position where even Vettel isn't actually advantaged by that decision. In the end of it, they don't actually think things through as, what should we be doing that's best for this team? They go, fuck, what do we do? Vettel, go! And then it all falls to shit anyway.
Yeah. No, it's dumb. And Ferrari's policy has been in place since before the start of this damn season. It's how they've been, you know, decided is the best way to try to beat Hamilton and Mercedes, to try after their humiliating losses in 2017 and 2018. And they are applying it with some gusto. This is now the third time in 3 races team orders have been imposed. In Australia, Leclerc was asked to hold position behind Vettel in the closing stages, having caught him, at least partly because of a better tyre strategy, he obeyed. In Bahrain, Leclerc was asked to stay behind Vettel for 2 laps. Leclerc didn't. He was a lot faster and he decided to pass Vettel anyway and went on to his, what should have been his maiden victory. In my head, it still is his maiden victory.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ferrari explode. And then in China,
Yes, but Ferrari explode.
But Ferrari explode. But and in China, you all saw what happened. So let's go on this other side of the coin now. Had Ferrari actually simply let their drivers race, the picture would potentially look a little different. From the pace at which he'd caught him on fresher tyres in Melbourne, it seems likely Leclerc would have passed Vettel for fourth place. Had they let them race in China and prioritise a lead driver at pit stops as normal... As is normal in practice in F1, Leclerc would have finished third, not Vettel. That would give Leclerc 7 more points than he has now and put him 25 points behind Hamilton, as well as ahead of Verstappen, into third place overall. So, ironically, Ferrari would potentially be in a better position in the Constructors' and the Drivers' Championship had they not pursued a policy aimed at maximizing their position in the championships.
No. Maximizing Vettel's position.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it's been. I mean, at this point, they really need to say, all right, fuck it. Whoever's in the lead at the end of lap one, they get preference for this race.
Yeah.
If you don't want to let them race, that's your next fucking choice.
Yeah.
Because to give Vettel it regardless of what's actually happening is no longer helpful to
anyone. It's not helpful.
It's not helpful to you. It's not helpful to Leclerc. Okay. It's helpful to Vettel, but it's not helpful to anything else.
It's not
helpful for the team.
It's not helpful for the team.
Mm.
Exactly. You could have had a much better constructors result.
And exactly, as you said, 25 points behind Hamilton. That's one fucked up Hamilton race.
Yeah.
You know, that's one victory when Hamilton DNFs. Yep. I mean, sure, it doesn't all happen at once necessarily, but that is a big, you know, difference between what we have right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking hell. Ferrari, it's been years that we criticize, everyone in Formula One criticize Ferrari's decision-making abilities. Benotto, whatever his name is. He needs to get his shit together. Benotto is the new leader. He needs to come over here and go, look, we used to make decisions a certain way. Clearly that hasn't fucking worked.
Mm.
I'm going to come in here, I'm going to stick my neck out and say, you know what? No, Vettel, you don't immediately get that.
You know what? And I thought he would be making those decisions already.
Okay, maybe the first few races of the season, they're trying to be a bit more conservative.
Maybe.
At this point, you need to bite the bullet and say, all right, that isn't working anymore.
No,
if it
exactly.
pisses off Vettel, so be it.
Exactly. Ferrari really has time to think, I
could understand. I mean, how long does Vettel have on his contract?
I think another year or two.
Not that I'm thinking that like he doesn't deserve his seat. I'm just thinking more along the lines of like, if he was to be unhappy and not want to re-sign, okay, you have options, right?
Yeah.
You have someone, I don't know, what's that name? It starts with S, young kid, Mick S something? What's
Mick,
his name?
Sockmacher?
Yeah, Sockmacher. Schlossmacher something. Mick Schlossmacher. He's coming through for Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, give him a chance. You know, just an idea.
All right. I don't know if he's exactly marketable with that kind of weird name.
I don't know. I mean, like, it's just an idea. It's just an idea.
Sure.
Like, there are young guys coming through that might, you know, might be all right.
Mm.
Anyway, moving on. Max Verstappen came fourth. Did pretty well to stay with the lead pack, I think. I mean, yes, he had to make the most of the situation being Ferrari fucking everything up.
A really well-executed strategy.
Yeah.
With everyone fucking up around
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Like, he had to make the most of, like, what are Ferrari doing? Well, we don't fucking know, but just slot yourself in between them because that's all you can do. And he did it. So well done for Verstappen. I think a well-deserved fourth place. And he's just kind of chugging along, getting the points he needs, proving that Honda engine is, you know, up to snuff for the most part.
Mm.
Is that a word? Up to snuff?
Up to scratch.
I know up to scratch, but isn't up to snuff a thing? It sounds vaguely dirty.
It sounds vaguely dirty, but also vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway, and then right up the top of the grid, the upper snuff, we have the two Mercedes, really in a league of their own.
Really,
I think
the uppest of snuffs.
Yes. Mm. Anyway. sorry, I'm really distracted by my word. Valtteri Bottas, first time in the season that he didn't get a better start over his teammate, and it was noticeable because Hamilton led that race from basically the go, finally getting off the line ahead of Bottas and really just having a race to his own. Towards the end of the race, he even kind of was asking, you know, is Vettel attacking Bottas, essentially meaning, can I ease off a little bit?
Yeah.
Because he knew he could.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Mercedes. You're continuing to make all the racing really boring for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing amazingly well.
Mm.
And considering how their year started, they're looking like they were lacking in downforce, lacking in a lot of things. It seems like it's all coming together for Mercedes. What I love is that the FIA ordered them. The Mercedes had made a front wing change that everyone else thought was illegal. Mm. And so the FIA ordered them to change it back. And they went on to win, like, yeah, to win
and qualify, like, 4/10 over. Yeah, crazy. What do we have here? Our predictions. By the way, just quickly, up to snuff is in the dictionary.
There you go.
It is an informal meaning to be up to the required standard.
There you are.
So it is a thing. But yeah, as we were saying, our predictions, we were both pretty wrong.
We were really wrong.
I was a little more.
Also, right, I've changed my predictions, the official F1.
Like season predictions? Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll get to those halfway through the year, but yeah, already it's looking like that. But you said Leclerc was going to win. So did I. You said Vettel was going to come second. I said he was going to come third. And then I said Hamilton was second, and you said he'd come third. So technically, I was the closest this week because I was only one off with Hamilton, and you were two.
And I guess so.
What is that noise?
My phone.
Oh, my goodness, Raj, we have... Oh, Aggie, I win this week. I'm going to edit this out. Oh, we're back. Raj, I'm not editing it. I'm not editing any of that. Anyway, moving on from when we were rudely interrupted by Raj's phone ringing. As I said...
Has to point it out.
I was more correct because I said Vettel was going to come third, which was correct. And I said Hamilton was second and he was only one off. So I was actually closer.
Sure.
Pole position, I said Vettel, you said Leclerc. We were both way off on that one.
Yeah.
And fastest lap, you said Bottas, I said Hamilton, and Gasly fucked that up for both of us. So, both are wrong on that one.
Yeah, wow, we suck.
Yeah, not so great. I will be putting in those details later, and we'll be calculating them as we go throughout the season. At the moment, we're still pretty close. Like, for every time I have a decent weekend, you come back the week after. So, we're fairly close.
Hmm.
As for the crack prediction... Oh, sorry. First of all, we'll do... Do you think it was a better or worse race than last year? We both said no, and I think it was no.
Yeah. It was really boring.
It was not a super exciting race, unfortunately. Yeah, just overall a bit of a bummer considering it was the 1,000th race, a lot of build-up for it, and yeah.
Yeah.
Our predictions, though, you said both Renaults for the points. Incorrect. Mm. I said F1 to fail on the 1,000th celebrations in some capacity.
Okay, let's see your interpretation of this.
I'm going to say, look, it's not really right. Like, nothing went crazy wrong, like a fireworks ran off wrong or, you know, a 1,000 balloon accidentally fell off the thing. Like, nothing weird, you know, like that. I will say it failed on the fact that the race was really boring for the 1,000th celebration.
Yeah.
But no. I don't think my crack prediction was what I thought it would be.
No.
Unfortunately not. One thing they did do this year, did you see that little video that went out on their Twitter with like every year of Formula One car, kind of like the outline of the car, where the engine's positioned, the steering wheel shape, like throughout the races?
I've seen stuff like that.
This one's a really well done one. We'll try and share that on the show notes because it's a really cool little clip.
Okay, sure.
But moving on, should we just get into some random bits of news that we have left?
Yes, sure.
Raj, I will let you start if you have another one.
Okay, it'll take me a while to find it, so... Right. Do you have one there?
Let me see what I have available for us. I should have had this
actually
prepared.
I've got it here. Okay, here we go. Alright, so... Would the Ferraris, with their greater straight line speed, be able to slipstream the Ferraris down that long back straight in China? That was a question that a lot of people had.
Wait, you said the Ferraris overtaking the Ferraris. Do you mean Mercedes?
The Ferrari's overtaking the Mercedes,
sorry. Yep.
Because Mercedes was just looking way better through the corners this weekend.
A lot more stable, 100%. Yeah.
Weirdly enough, the Ferrari's looked way better down that straight. Mm.
Yeah, this is a weird turn of... Like, that has not been like that for many years.
No, it hasn't. But Ferrari, with their choice of the way they've set that car up this year, it's a very low drag kind of thing.
Sure.
Also... Yeah, at the start of the year, I thought, wow, they've gone really low drag. They must have a lot of downforce to spare. Mm. Doesn't seem they do. So that's really kind of unfortunate. But yeah, so the Ferrari took a lot more steering through there than the Mercedes and through pretty much every corner of long duration, of which there are many here in China, and was consequently slower onto the straight. So we're... where about where, you know, when they finally actually got going on their straight, they really just made up the time that they lost by getting onto it in the first damn place. So the Ferrari power advantage and the kind of low drag setup really didn't help them here at all. Even with that 1.5 kilometer straight, whatever it is, it didn't help them. And yeah, the GPS data that people have seen all through the season has shown that their power advantage is not, it's not really taking. Their entire car setup isn't really taking. And that's not a good thing. But yeah, that's my story basically, is that Ferrari is just looking worse and worse as, as we see every single race. There's a lot more problems seem to just bubble to the surface.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ugh. Sebastian Vettel has slammed the media. I love these headlines. Over the team order questions. So essentially, post...
Has he really slammed them?
Well, you be the judge. I'll tell you his comments. Frustrated by the barrage of questions about the Ferrari's use of the team orders, Sebastian Vettel had a go at Formula One journalists in Shanghai, following what we've discussed about in the race review there. Asked about the call, Vettel hit out at the media saying, "Let's put it this way. I knew the moment that that was happening, I would have to face these kind of questions. I'm not sure I want to answer because I'm a little bit against the way that you, all of you, work, because you take bits of answers here and there and put it together in the wrong light. So if you ask me again in half an hour or so in the paddock, maybe I'll give you a straightforward answer and you don't write it down or record it. It seems the way that not maybe all of you, but some of you are working." Okay, I see what he's saying.
Yeah, no, if you speak in German, you'll understand that.
That was like a weird, like sort of like Donald Trump-esque rant. Like, I kind of know what you're talking about, but it doesn't make a huge amount of sense.
Mm.
I felt that I was faster in that car. I was asked if I could go faster, and I answered that I felt that I could. I was a bit surprised when I was in the free air. Not surprised, but I was struggling a bit to put the laps together. Once I found the rhythm, I think I was able to chip away, but obviously the objective was to try and catch a Mercedes. At that point, the gap was obviously quite a bit big, though.
Yeah.
I don't know
so
if you
what
slammed
you're saying
him.
Is that you wish you were faster, Sebastian, and you're not?
Look, put it this way, on Planet F1, this has 29% angry emoji reactions.
Yeah.
So I think the majority of people are, you know, fairly pissed off about this whole thing. At least 29% are at least angry emoji pissed off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if he slammed him, but I certainly think the questions are warranted, you know? Like,
yeah.
Of course they're going to ask that question. It's like, "Hi, Vettel, we just saw something happen that we don't really think is fair enough. Do you have any explanation?" Like, he doesn't. He clearly doesn't. And that's why instead of answering it and saying, "I genuinely believed I was faster and I genuinely believe I should be getting this straight," he goes, no, I'm having a go at the media now.
Mm.
It's clearly a deflection tactic in my mind.
Yeah. Mexico's going to pay for this wall.
All right, we're not going to get into this, Raj.
All right.
Your fake news. Right. Give me real news for us.
I do. So, Monza urgently needs 60 million euro for its 100 anniversary kind of renovation, which we'd actually talked about at the
I
end
feel
of
like
last
I've heard that
year.
Number being thrown around.
Yeah.
60 million euro, that's a lot.
It's a lot of money. But the Automobile Club d'Italia president says Monza urgently needs 60 million pounds for the renovation work it once completed for its 100th anniversary and needs to secure its Formula One future. At the end of last year, it emerged that Monza bosses were planning major changes to the famous Italian circuit for its centenary year in 2022, including removing one of its chicanes and possibly bringing back banking. However, the Italian Grand Prix does not have an F1...
Bring back banking.
Wow. I know, that would be so epic. So epic. Please, Italian government, give them the money. That's essentially what this story is saying. So Italian Grand Prix does not have an F1 deal beyond the current season. Angelo Damiani, president of the ACI, has now said that it is urgent that it gets 60 million euros of its estimated $100 million budget for this renovation. So
that's
God
so
damn,
much money.
That's a lot of money.
Just for comparison, that's 4,724,706,046 Indian rupee.
So, oh, wow. Like, that huge. Really, that makes it sound so much bigger.
Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, in terms of Australian dollars, that is like
$100 million,
basically. It's basically $100 million Australian, that is. Fuck, that's so much money.
Mm.
I mean, my footy team's just got $20 million to build a grandstand.
Mm.
I mean, feel like for $100 million, you need to get a lot out of that.
They gave 20 mil to the Sea Eagles to build a grandstand?
They did.
Oh, God, that's a lot of money for those guys.
Well, look, Raj, this is totally un-Formula 1 related, but I have to say this because it's the funniest thing that's happened over the last 2 weeks.
What?
Our ex-Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, came to the game at halftime to announce this funding, and he got booed.
He gives a team
$20 million and they booed him. How insane is that? That you can go up to someone and be like, I'm going to give you this, and they go, fuck you. Thank you, but fuck you.
Oh, anyway, Lord.
Totally unrelated. But do you see that is actually like feasible? That they get $60 million to do that? Or do we actually see some sort of way that Monza falls off the calendar?
I think it's feasible. But I also think it's feasible that we'll see San Marino come back as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was about to say there are other tracks in Italy.
Exactly. So we'll see.
Yeah, we will see.
We'll see. Alrighty, so did I go through this story?
What was this?
The MGUK
one. We did do that. We mentioned that in the race review.
I did do that. So anyway, this one from Rosberg. Rosberg thinks Ferrari's 2019 F1 car is in the wrong place aerodynamically.
Yes, I saw this. He was saying something along the lines of like it is pushing the air like upwards when it shouldn't be or something, like in totally wrong direction.
Yeah, you could kind of say that, but basically what he's saying is it's pitched incorrectly aerodynamically.
Pitched incorrectly, okay.
So in terms of the balance of the car, in terms of how much downforce it's creating, right, downforce versus drag, it's just pitched incorrectly, entirely incorrectly, and it'll take a lot of work to kind of fix these issues. And so, the Italian team has taken a different aerodynamic approach to Mercedes this year. As we saw back in when the cars were released, I thought it was an incredible idea, as did pretty much everyone in the world. Mm. It seems, though, that this kind of higher downforce kind of idea is the better idea. Ferrari's just struggling, Nico.
Well, so far on the tracks. I mean, we're about to go to Baku, which has the longest straight of all of them.
Yes, it also has a lot of slow corners in the second sector.
Yeah, that's true.
So we'll see. Baku will be an interesting one. Yeah. But anyway, Nico goes on to say that eventually. But he says, Ferrari's just struggling. Ferrari have pitched their car in the wrong place aerodynamically. They have way too little drag and just way not enough downforce in the corners.
This is the hardest thing about doing a Formula One podcast is reading quotes from people
who don't speak English.
Like,
probably.
It's not their first language. Like, it's admirable this guy's talking about very technical things.
Yeah.
But, like, you'll get a great sentence out and then you'll, like, put in three double negatives.
Yeah.
Like, it's not totally incorrect if you know what I'm not talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's just what? But anyway, so that's where they're losing time, he says, in the corners.
Yeah.
It's not ideal in terms of the fastest possible lap. It's really just not ideal. They're just in the wrong place, really, with their car. Ferrari is going to be strong on the tracks with a lot of straights. Baku, I'm not really sure. There's so many slow corners. They're going to lose out a lot there, and a lot of straights where they're going to gain. So it's difficult to judge if they're going to be
what's going to outweigh the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really nice to see Rosberg coming out and saying something that isn't, look at Hamilton out there in the front. What an amazing weekend from Hamilton. I really love Hamilton. He's such an amazing teammate. And look at him out there at front. He's, you know, every time I hear him on commentary, I was really looking forward to hearing Rosberg's opinion.
Actually, you know, it's not really that he's, you know,
he's singing Hamilton's praises a lot.
Yes.
Which is justified. He's winning the race, but, you know.
Yes, but think about it. He's the 2016 world champion, one of the few people
who
has beaten Hamilton. So, of course, he's going to come out and say, oh, my God, Hamilton really is one of the most incredible drivers ever.
That's exactly what he's doing. He's coming, like, so, Rosberg, what do you think of the Red Bull situation? I think it's fine, but I think what we really should be talking about is how hard it would be to ever get in front of Hamilton, ever.
Yeah.
Like, it's just incredible to think anyone could ever do it at any point in time.
Hamilton really had an amazing performance this weekend, didn't he? Yeah. Nico, his engine exploded on lap two. Yeah, but it was until that happened, it was.
It would
just,
be hard to ever beat him.
It really would be impossible to beat him.
Yeah, maybe that's exactly what he's doing. I like Rosberg, and clearly he knows what he's talking about when he comes out with, you know, poorly worded statements like that.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm being so mean to Rosberg.
So mean.
Moving on, Raj. I have one here. Giovinazzi has hit the same problem that Leclerc did in Bahrain.
Really?
Yeah. So apparently the issues that were sort of, I mentioned it in the race review very, very briefly, but I didn't cover it properly. The qualifying session in China that was stopped for Giovinazzi was impacted by the same problem that Leclerc had in his Bahrain race 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So, you know, we mentioned like, oh, it's super rare, never would have happened. You know, it's unprecedented, all that shit. 1 week, like one race later, it seems to have hit Giovinazzi with a similar engine.
Huh.
So, I would not be surprised if this is not the last time we see this.
Yeah.
In some capacity,
yeah,
affecting a Ferrari engine.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they weed it out. But, I mean, wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden we see Haas have a problem in Bahrain for an unexplained, unprecedented issue coming back to that engine.
At the end of the day, it's funny. I didn't think I'd ever say this year, but it's the least of their issues. They need to find some damn downforce.
Actually,
they need some grip.
Sorry, I take it back. It won't be happening to the Haas because after the issue, both the Ferraris and both the Haas entries were fitted with the new spec control electronics unit.
Right.
But according to the guys at Sauber, they could not fit it for the Alfa Romeo in time for China.
Right.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense. He said, yeah, again, this is unfortunate because we're 200% supportive of Antonio and what he's able to do. I know what he has done before. I see every day what he is able to do. It is not obvious so far on the timesheet, but I'm sure he will be able to show what he is capable of very soon. So
yeah,
they're standing by him, and they agree what you said. He's one of the most unlucky guys out there at the moment.
No, at the moment, he's been having literally the worst luck in the damn world.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully that'll all turn around soon.
Yeah.
Gasly, I don't think it's based on luck. I think it's based on lack of performance. So that's the difference.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, no, look, you're right. Antonio does not seem to be... That is not in question. There is no question around Antonio like there is around Gasly.
Yeah.
And of course, that comes with the pressure of driving for a top three team versus, you know, your Alfa Romeos of the grid. But it's not even in contention really at the moment, so...
Well, Jesus, in Formula One, that's the horrible part, is the only reference point you have is your teammate at all times, right? It's always based on the teammate.
Mm.
So it's like having Fernando Alonso as your teammate, just an impossible benchmark the entire time.
Yeah.
Having Max Verstappen as a benchmark, an impossible benchmark. So even as good as Pierre Gasly is, and in his junior career, I was screaming for him to be in Formula One because of his, you know, the results that he had. Maybe it's just in comparison to Verstappen that he's crap. You know, maybe if he was up against, I don't even know.
Stroll.
Like, Stroll or Liuzzi or like back in the day,
right,
you know,
sure, okay,
like he would be way, way better in comparison. So you have no idea really how good a person is in Formula One. It's often, you know, like Marcus Ericsson, for example, we didn't think much of him, but he's quite good in IndyCar.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with Marcus Ericsson. He's just always struggled in those seats.
Yeah.
He was always in a pretty rough spot to really shine. But anyway, do you have any more stories? We've got to keep going.
I only have one Dakar rally story, so no F1 stuff.
All right, well, I'll give you this noise.
Woo! Alrighty, so the Dakar rally switches to Saudi Arabia for the 2020 from 2020 in terms of a 5-year deal.
I'm sure that has gone down like really awesome. No one's worried about the human rights concerns, and we're all loving that.
Yeah. What? Yes.
Continue.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking.
No,
about.
I mean just every time Saudi Arabia gets to host any sporting event, no one talks about it anymore.
We treat our women well, okay?
Yeah, that's where the conversation goes.
Okay.
And, you know, right, vice versa. All our citizens are alive and well. Can't you see them? Whatever. This has gone terribly. Come, Raj, continue. I'm turning my mic off.
Okay, that's probably a good thing. He needs to, like, bite his tongue now. Good God.
I'm still here.
Oh, Lord.
Don't forget me!
Brayden, we've forgotten about you already.
Continue,
so just shush.
Continue.
Stop. Put your mic off. But anyway, Dakar Rally has confirmed that the 2020 edition will take place in Saudi Arabia, as previously reported by Autosport. Event organizer ASO confirmed the move on Monday and officially marking the end of the rally's South American era, which began in 2009 after a move away from Africa due to terrorist concerns and stuff like that.
Also bad things, yes.
But the agreement with the Saudi authorities believed to be for 5 years and brings much-needed financial respite to the ASO. Of course, the Saudis are paying for this, paying a lot of money for this.
What do you need to pay to do the Dakar rally? Like, bring in a bunch of dirt from other countries?
What?
It's kind of like, hey, there's a big dirt patch over there. Go race your cars.
No, they need to pay to host it.
Okay, the rights, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, I think you meant the actual event hosting. Like, it's really just driving around in dirt. Like, there's not, like, a stadium you got
to
build.
Yeah, but to invite the best drivers in the world to come to your dirt...
Yes, sure.
That costs money, okay?
That's the name of the episode. Come to our dirt.
Come to our dirt. Oh, lordy lord. So, anyway, Saudi Arabia can offer 1.4 million square miles of desert for the Dakar.
A lot of dirt.
So, wow. That's a lot of dirt. But in any case... It's kind of what makes the Dakar cool is that you get, this is your starting point. That's your ending point.
Yeah.
How you get there is up to you.
Go whatever way like works for you. Yeah. And you do it on multiple off-road vehicles.
Multiple classes. So there's a kind of truck class. There's a car class. There's motorcycles. Correct. I actually saw Toby Price down in Melbourne, one of the Australian winners of the Dakar, which was freaking amazing.
Okay, Raj, I have a question. I'm reading the About Dakar. It says, most of the competitive special sections are off-road, I know what that is, crossing dunes, makes sense, mud, yep, camel grass, I assume that's a kind of grass, rocks, and erg.
Sorry?
Erg.
How do you spell that?
E-R-G.
E-R-G?
Yes, erg.
Oh, okay, no, I don't really want to talk about
it. Do you want to know what that is? Do you know what that is?
I don't.
Apparently, it's some sort of dune, which was not covered by the other one.
So, it's a dune, but it wasn't covered in the dunes.
Yeah, dunes, camel grass, and erg dunes.
I see.
But that, look, I'm just giving some people some context. If you don't know what the Dakar Rally is, it's very different to Formula One. It is not a traditional race.
Even if you're familiar with the World Rally Championship. It's different to that. You know, that's on the road.
There is a course.
It's a course.
You do it timed, but it's a course. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
So think about what I was just saying just then. Point A, point B, how you get there's up to you. Go nuts.
Exactly.
And you have to get there as fast as you bloody can.
It's also a very dangerous.
It is
the most dangerous rally, I think, statistically.
Yes. On planet Earth. No
and
doubt.
One of the most dangerous races after things like the Isle of Man and things like that.
Yep.
It is mainly because it is such a big space.
Yep.
In the middle of generally nowhere. Not a huge amount of, you know, like medical facilities between, you know, two patches of dirt, things like that.
Things
it's a
have
crazy
changed
race,
in the last
but it's still
two
crazy.
Years. It's still crazy, but now obviously they have, first of all, you can see everyone. Everyone has visual contact with everyone at all times.
Sure.
They have satellite tracking. There is a medical helicopter on standby at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So without that, Toby Price wouldn't have been able to make it to the end of the Dakar, I don't think. But anyway, Prince Khalid bin Sultan Abdullah Al Faisal, president of the Motor Federation of Saudi
Arabia.
My cousin
has the same name.
It's a very familiar name to my cousin. Added, I've always wanted to participate in the Dakar, and I did not have the opportunity to fulfill this ambition. I am now involved in the realization of a dream even greater to have the Dakar in the Middle East for the first time.
Oh, fuck. I really thought you were going to turn around. It's like, I've been really excited to have it here, so I'm going to be racing. Like, I really thought that's where you were going that.
If he could, he would.
Yeah, at least he comes to the realization. He's like, I'm not prepared for that. I'm happy to host it, at least.
Yeah.
That was very...
Yeah,
what
wow.
What do you mean he didn't have the means to do it? He has, like, all the money in the world to throw at that problem.
That's true. But he said he didn't have the opportunity to fulfill this ambition. So, in other words, he was slow. The vision and support of His Highness Prince Mohammed bin Salman and the confidence of the President of the General Sports Authority, Abdul Aziz bin Al Turki Al Faisal, Were the keys that allowed us to obtain the rights to organize an event of such magnitude. I just needed to say those names.
You could have said the same name twice. I didn't even, like, you lost.
They sound similar.
They do
don't
sound
they?
Similar. I mean, yeah. Do you know what's similar about them? The fact that they both have seven names within their name. That's the confusing part.
Yeah, I know. And no, this guy had a really suspiciously short name. His
Darren.
Highness Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Oh, I thought you were going to say His Highness Prince Darren or something nice and, you know.
No,
okay. Anyway, we've gone so far off topic. We've been Backmarker Podcast.
Indeed, we have been Backmarker Podcast. And also, we are up on Spotify now.
That is true. Before we give you our socials, we do have that announcement. We are on Spotify in the podcast section, so you can follow us there. So you get a little alert when you open up your Spotify app that there's new episodes whenever we release them. So if you're not already subscribed somewhere else and you use Spotify, it's the perfect place to get us. Yep. You can follow us there. Even if you're already following us, follow us on Spotify too. Why not?
Why not?
More Backmarker.
Why not? Review us there too. Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
As for our socials, Raj, we are backmarkerpodcast.com if you need any of those, but we are Backmarker Podcast on Facebook, Backmarker Podcast on Instagram, and we are Backmarker Pod on Twitter. Raj, we normally finish the show with a nice little haiku from Kimi Räikkönen. Do you have one prepared?
I do indeed.
Oh, but before you do that, next week's episode will be slightly later than normal.
Yes.
I'm on a bit of a break, and in terms of getting us in the studio, we'll be doing it slightly later, but we will still be getting it out to you before the race in Baku. So yep. Do not fret. It just might be 24-ish hours later than expected. That's all.
Yep.
That's all.
But Braden will, due to the delay, be really on the money with his editing
and
stuff.
I will be. I'm on holiday, so I have more time.
Indeed.
So that'll be good. But Raj, round us out with a nice poem. What is this one called by Kimi Räikkönen?
This one's called Better Half.
I like it.
Yeah. So championships are won in the first half of the season, not just the second half.
This is true.
Indeed.
We've
and
been
so
back.
With that piece of wisdom, we will leave you to your dinner. Leave you to all of the rest of the things that life will throw at you. Kimi Räikkönen, I know he's trying to be a wise old man now. So I think, I think we'll leave you with that one for the week.
Good night. Bye.